Have you ever watched someone white-knuckle the door handle on a perfectly smooth flight? You're straight and level. The engine's humming right where it should be. Nothing is wrong, and the person next to you is convinced they're about to become a statistic. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar. Today, we're not talking about a new rule or a fresh airworthiness directive. Today, we're talking about the person in the right seat. Your spouse, your kid, your best friend from work who finally said yes to going flying with you, and how you turn that nervous passenger into something a lot more valuable, an active participant. There's a good piece in Flying Magazine that got me thinking about this, and the core idea is simple. Cockpit anxiety and situational awareness are two sides of the same coin. Fear usually isn't about danger, it's about not knowing what's happening. So if you give your passenger awareness, you take away the fear. Here's what you need to know. Before we get into it, today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, the discipline, and the pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. And you know that's fitting for today? Because the first flight you take someone on is a milestone too. It's theirs. AviationSoul.com. So let's start with what actually causes the fear, because the headline doesn't tell the whole story. When a person who's never flown in a small airplane gets in one, almost everything is a threat signal to their nervous system. The engine changes pitch, and they don't know if that's normal. The nose drops slightly in a turn, and their stomach tells them something is wrong. You bank 30 degrees to enter the pattern, and to them, the whole world just tilted for no reason they can understand. Here's the thing. You know all of that is normal. You've felt it 10,000 times. Your brain filed those sensations under routine years ago, but your passenger's brain hasn't. Every one of those cues is brand new, and the human mind fills an information gap with the worst-case story it can invent. That's the real problem. It isn't turbulence. It isn't the airplane. It's the silence. It's the gap between what's happening and what your passenger understands about what's happening. And the fix is almost embarrassingly simple. You narrate. Let me give you the practical version. Before the flight even starts, you brief them. Not a checklist, a conversation. Tell them what the engine is going to sound like on run-up, because you're deliberately going to run it up loud and hard. And if they don't know that's coming, the mag check alone can spike their heart rate. Tell them the airplane is going to bank in turns, and that banking is how airplanes turn. It sounds obvious to you. It is not obvious to them. Tell them that if they feel a little light in their seat over rising terrain or on a warm, bumpy afternoon, that's just the air moving, the same way a boat moves on water. I like the water comparison a lot, actually. Nobody gets in a boat and panics when it rocks. They expect it. They've decided in advance that a moving boat is normal. Your job is to get your passenger to decide, before the wheels leave the ground, that a moving airplane is normal too. Then in the air, you keep talking. You call your turns. Coming left here, going to bring the nose around toward that lake. You call altitude changes, going to bring us down a little now. You'll feel your ears do their thing. You point out the traffic you see, and here's where it gets good. Because now you're not just calming them down, you're recruiting them. This is the part I really want you to hear. An informed passenger isn't just a calmer passenger. An informed passenger is a resource. Think about it from a single pilot safety standpoint. You are one set of eyes in an airplane with a lot of window and a lot of sky to scan. The number one thing that keeps you from a mid-air collision in the pattern and in the practice area is see and avoid. And see and avoid is a numbers game. More eyeballs, more chance of spotting that airplane before it becomes a problem. Your passenger has eyes. They're already staring out the window. Right now, those eyes are just feeding anxiety. But if you teach them one job, one simple job, you convert that nervous energy into safety. The job is this. If you see another airplane, tell me where it is, and don't stop pointing at it until I say, I've got it. That's it. You don't need them to know the difference between a Cessna and a Cirrus. You don't need them talking on the radio. You just need them to sing out when they see traffic. And a first-timer, wide awake and scanning because they're a little keyed up, will sometimes catch traffic before you do. I've had it happen. It's humbling and it's wonderful. This affects you if you fly with the same non-pilot regularly, because over time, that person can genuinely become a second crew member. They can hold a heading reference for you while you fold a chart. They can read you a frequency. They can watch for the airport while your head's down setting up an approach. None of that requires a certificate. It requires that you invited them in instead of leaving them to stew in silence. Now let me connect this to something the safety world has been saying for decades, because this isn't just feel-good advice, this is straight out of crew resource management. Crew resource management, or CRM, came out of airline accidents in the 1970s and 80s, where the airplane was working fine and the crew flew a perfectly good aircraft into the ground, because information didn't move around the cockpit. Somebody knew something and didn't say it, or said it too softly, and people died. The entire fix was cultural. Get everybody talking, make it normal for any person in the cockpit to speak up about what they're seeing. We call the single pilot version of that single pilot resource management. And for years, people treated it like it only meant you and your automation and your checklists. But your passenger is a resource. The article's word participant is exactly right. You're running a two-person cockpit whether you plan to or not. The only question is whether that second person is helping you or quietly working themselves into a panic. You'll have to manage later. Let me flag something as opinion here because I try to be straight with you about what's fact and what's my read. My read is that a lot of us are quietly a little proud of the mystery. There's an ego thing where we like being the one who understands the magic, and explaining it feels like giving something away. Fight that. The pilot who explains what's happening isn't a smaller pilot. They're a safer one, and they're the one whose passengers actually want to come back and go flying again. And that last part matters more than you might think for the health of what we do. General aviation runs on people falling in love with it. Almost every pilot you know can point to one flight, one person who took them up, that lit the fire. If you scare somebody on their first flight because you didn't bother to tell them the airplane was going to bank, you might have just closed a door that would have led to a student pilot, a lifelong passion, maybe an aviation career. We lose potential aviators to bad first flights all the time, and it's almost always preventable. So here's the how-to, the part you can actually use this weekend. Brief on the ground, sounds, motion, sensations. Tell them what's normal before they feel it. So when they feel it, it confirms what you told them instead of triggering fear. Give them a job. Traffic spotting is the perfect one. Simple, useful, and it turns their attention outward instead of inward on their own stomach. Narrate everything. Turns, descents, power changes, that funny sound the gear makes. The controller's instruction you just read back. Silence is the enemy. Fill it, and let them help. Hand them small tasks as their confidence grows. A heading to watch, a landmark to find, a frequency to read. Every task is a little more ownership, and ownership is the opposite of fear. One more thing, and this is a caution, not a green light. There is a line. Giving your passenger a lookout job and letting them hold the yoke straight and level on a calm day is great. Task saturating yourself trying to run a flight school in the middle of a busy pattern is not. You are still the pilot in command. If the workload climbs, if the weather turns, if you're in a demanding phase of flight, the teaching stops and the flying takes over. Brief your passenger on that too. Tell them, if I go quiet and focused, that's normal. That's me doing my job, and I'll fill you in when we've got a second. That one sentence prevents a whole lot of, why did you stop talking, is something wrong. Because here's the loop that ties it all together. You inform them so they're not afraid. They're not afraid so they can pay attention. They're paying attention so they become useful. They're useful, so you're safer. And they had a good time, so they come back. Every piece of that starts with you deciding not to fly in silence. My thanks to Flying Magazine, where the piece that sparked this ran for making the case that a passenger and a participant are two very different people in the same seat. If you want the links from today, they're at radiohangar.com. So next time you pre-flight with someone new climbing into the right seat, spend the extra 5 minutes on the ground, tell them what's coming, give them a job, you might just turn a white-knuckle passenger into the best pair of eyes you ever flew with. This is Tower. Keep talking to each other up there.